This is CBC Radio 1, 690 AM in Vancouver.
As Vancouver prepares for another homeless count, we assess the mayor's Project Civil City. Commissioner Jeff Plant will be our guest tomorrow morning on the early edition. Also tomorrow, is the Campbell government shortchanging those who live with developmental difficulties? And of course, more on the Cadman controversy in our weekly Ottawa report. That, plus Rick Mercer and much more tomorrow morning on the early edition, only here on CBC Radio 1.
Hello, I'm Belle Puri. On the coast today, would-be space crew returns home from Utah Mars Simulation Base. A tribute to Jeff Healey, and students walk out over school calendar year. On the coast starts after the 3 o'clock news. Hello, welcome to On the Coast. I'm Belle Puri. In our first hour today, back from Mars. Well, sort of. We'll talk to a Simon Fraser University student after his visit to the Mars Simulation Station in Utah. Then, Dating Diana finds out how you can improve your relationship and increase your lifespan. After the 3:30 news, want a website you can call your own? Technology columnist Nora Young helps us search the internet's latest publishing tool. And Vancouver's next gay top model will be chosen on Thursday night. We get a preview of the competition. That's all in the next hour on the coast. It's Monday. Jenna's here with a look at traffic. Did you hear that? It's snowing.
You know what? This morning, somebody phoned and said it was snowing north of the Malahat, and another guy phoned saying it was snowing on the east side of Burnaby Mountain in Port Moody.
This is downtown Vancouver, Jenna.
I know. I didn't see any snow when I came in, but when I drove home this morning, there was a little bit on my windshield.
How's traffic?
There's an accident in Vancouver, southbound Oak at 49th, another one in New Westminster, 10th and Cumberland. At the BC Ferries, the 5 o'clock Tawasana-Swords Bay is already at least three-quarters full. Not so bad for the Swords Bay to Tawasin at 5. That's only about 30%. At the Albion Ferries, a 3 to 4 sailing wait from both the Maple Ridge and the Fort Langley sides. If you have any traffic tips, 604-662-6134 for the CBC Radio 1 Traffic Desk.
Chris Robinson's at the sports desk. What's that smell? Oh, it's the Canucks.
Indeed, Belle. La, la, la. Lackluster, lax, and lackadaisical, however you want to describe it. The Canucks just are not getting the job done. But the BC Hockey Leaguers are ready to rock in their playoffs tonight. We'll have details for you later on in the program.
He has just returned from the Red Planet, or a simulation of it at least. Kerry Cupid is a fourth-year Simon Fraser Earth Sciences student. He was the only BC student in an all-Canadian team that headed down to the Mars Desert Research Station in Utah. Now, we spoke to him just before he left. You probably remember that. Now, Kerry's back, and he is in studio. Welcome back from Mars.
Hi, Belle. Thanks.
He's just so calm. You went down to do some research. Give us a refresher on that. What was the point of going down?
Yeah, well, we had 8 people on the team, many of which were engineers and a few of which were scientists like myself. I was the crew geologist and I had my pet project. I was looking at soil gases and measuring the different concentrations of gases like carbon dioxide and methane, basically to try and locate resources that astronauts might be able to use,
mm-hmm.
or more accurately, to test the techniques that astronauts would use to locate those resources.
And how did it go?
It went well. I learned a lot about the different techniques and working with like gigantic spacesuit gloves and remembering to bring everything with you, of course, when you go into the field. But it was great, and a lot of great stuff came out of it.
Are there some parts of it that you can share with us that we'll be able to understand without having to be scientists?
Certainly. Well, in terms of the actual science, it was a bit of a difficult situation, and it was a bit unknown if everything would work out in terms of the science. And a lot of the results that I got back at the moment are inconclusive. However, there's a lot that came out of it in terms of how to work with equipment, I mean, it was a very technical study that I had.
Mm-hmm.
We used everything from sledgehammers to $30,000 gas analyzers that are used in the environmental industry. And so between all that equipment, I was really impressed with the way everything worked. We got 18 holes dug in different locations around the research station, measured the soil gases, and plotted them up on a map, and everything went smoothly. It's just next time, if I go back, I would bring some more sensitive equipment, I think.
Now, you had to live and work under Mars-like conditions. What was
that
like?
It was pretty good. I think the hardest thing was probably the isolation. Built into the simulation is the fact that we can't communicate with anyone in real time on Earth. There's no phones, no video conferencing, no instant messaging. Everything's through email, and that was probably the hardest part. But apart from just that, you really got to know the eight people that you're with for 2 weeks in one very small room,
mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of fun, really, overall.
And the spacesuit. You lived in a spacesuit?
Well, yes. Every time we went outside, for the most part, we tried to be in sim, which meant in simulation. And we did that in spacesuits whenever we wanted to go out and do some maintenance outside, even to work on the all-terrain vehicles that we used for moving around the surface. We had to refill in spacesuits and check the oil in spacesuits and the whole thing.
What was that like in terms of being able to move around?
It was difficult. The packs that we wore were probably 20 to 30 pounds or so. And the hardest part was probably going uphill at any time. You did not want to go uphill because you had the spacesuit on. The face mask was very close to your face, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And your air was supplied by the machines running on your back. So if you overexerted yourself, you have to wait for the machines to catch up with you and take a few minutes to catch your breath. But it was interesting. There are a lot of different challenges, and, I mean, if you didn't have enough pockets with you, it really complicates things because you can't just put equipment down on the ground where you might lose it 5 minutes later. You really have to keep track of things.
And what did you do for food?
Food was all freeze-dried. We set up an arrangement with a freeze-dried food supplier in the States, and they come up with these freeze-dried food packs that they use mostly for emergency packs and climbers and hikers and whatnot. And we use them on our trip because it's very typical of what Mars astronauts probably would be eating, freeze-dried food, because it's light and you can prepare it anywhere. I must say that I definitely prefer more traditional types of food more than freeze-dried food.
But there was something that was fresh, wasn't there?
Yes, well, we do have a greenhouse at the Mars Desert Research Station, and previous crews will plant a few vegetables here and there and a few herbs and spices, and we were lucky enough that we were able to harvest two radishes.
Two among
radishes.
Eight people.
For 2 weeks. And these weren't very impressive radishes. That you could barely call them like 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter, but they were sure happy to have them.
And obviously you had to keep the station up and running by yourselves. Like, you couldn't call for help when something went wrong. What kinds of problems did you have in keeping everything going?
Exactly. Well, the nice thing about being one of the scientists on the trip and is that the engineers who are charged with keeping the station running are the ones who have to bolt out of their chairs when the lights flicker or when the power goes out. I would help them if I could, but I'm certain I probably wouldn't have been much help to them. But among the difficulties that we had a lot of power outages during the first few days. The generators kept dying. They were using the wrong types of oil in the generators for a while. And we are very remote. We have to fix all these problems ourselves. So we have a backup and a backup for the backup, and I think even a backup for the backup for the backup.
And now what will become of your research?
Well, I have submitted a proposal to the International Astronautical Congress, and hopefully I can present my results to a bit of a bigger audience, which would be a great opportunity for me, partly because it's in Glasgow. I could really use a bit of another vacation, but it would be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
And how prepared are you to actually go to Mars?
Well, I'm sure if you asked me about a month ago, I probably would have said I would very strongly consider it, but after being there for 2 weeks, it has kind of put a lot of things in perspective for me.
Like
missing that connection with family and friends. I worked in a mining camp last summer, and I was gone for 6 weeks, but because I could phone people anytime I wanted, I had no problem. But at the research station, I think the biggest thing that I missed was being able to talk to someone, family and friends that I miss so much. So to answer your question, I would definitely go into orbit. I would definitely go to the moon. The Mars, I'd probably think about a bit, but I'd still seriously consider it.
Unless, of course, there are Martians.
Yeah, well, even though I'd like to meet a few.
Good luck with your research and processing it. Thank you for sharing your experience with us.
Great. Thanks, Belle.
SFU Earth Sciences student Kerry Cupid, and you can check out his experiences at the Mars Desert Research Station on his blog, and this is how you find it, spaceman.ca/blog. Quite simple.